listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam. Streaming on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and at DCAUReview.com. Now, here's today's episode.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 131 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts this week, Cal, with me, my good brother, good friend, and co-host, the guy that runs our Twitter page, it's Liam. Liam, welcome to episode 131 of the DCAU Review.
That's right. Glad to be here. We are back covering Batman the Animated Series for the entire month of November. We're excited to jump back in. We've got a classic episode to talk about. But not only that, Cal, we have our second ever special correspondent. We have the colorist of Batman the Adventures Continue and several other projects, Monica Kubina. Monica, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we are just super excited here. We've been fanboying all week about this in anticipation. Not only do we get to have somebody that's like a major player in the DCAU and the creation of the DCAU on our podcast, we also get to talk about one of the landmark episodes in Batman the Animated Series history. This one usually ranks towards the top of most people's favorites list, Liam, and almost got him. So it's an exciting historic day here at the DCAU Review.
Yeah, absolutely. We're super excited to be here. As Cal mentioned, this is a great episode to talk about, and there's so all the different villains and everything that we'll get to as we jump into plot here. We'll get mine and Cal's takes on it. But first, we did have a couple just basic interview questions. We want to do some due diligence. If you happen to somehow be listening to the show and not know who Monica is, like I mentioned, she's currently the colorist on Batman the Adventures Continue, which is, as we found out, is not over. We have at least one more issue coming.
That's right.
And we're very excited about that. But we just had a couple of questions we wanted to ask Monica, just to let you introduce yourself a little bit more on a personal level to our audience.
Yeah. So Monica, for those that are not in the know, how did you get your start in comics?
I got my start. I was actually working in makeup at the time for film. I was doing effects makeup. And a friend asked me by chance if I'd be interested in trying out as a colorist at a place called Electric Crayon. And they were primarily doing the Marvel books. They were doing a lot of X-Men and Spider-Man, Hulk, and whatnot. And I thought it sounded really cool, but I had just gotten out of school and I had just started working. So I didn't think that it would be my future, but It was so exciting that I couldn't turn it down. And so I brought in my portfolio and I showed my paintings and my sculptures and everything, and they hired me. So it's sort of, my story is the inverse of most people's, where they work really hard and then they get in. I got in and then I had to work hard to stay in.
Wow.
Well, that's awesome. Well, so I guess our second question would be then, what was your first exposure to the DCAU, or, you know, the Batman Animated Series universe?
It was actually, yeah, the Batman the Animated Series. It was interesting because I was working for Marvel at the time, and I was just absolutely in love with Batman the Animated Series. And I was like, why can't I work on this? So here we are so many years later, and this is where I'm at. And it's just been, you know, the best. It's been what I've always wanted to color. And not just Batman, but in the style of the animated series.
Absolutely. Well, if you've not listened to our episodes reviewing the Batman the Adventures Continue series, you can hear us guffaw over Monica's coloring and Ty Templeton's beautiful artwork for that entire 7-issue series run. So we encourage you to check those out in the archives at dcaureview.com. We said over and over again, Monica, that was the highlight every single week, being able to digitally open up that book and see what you guys had brought us visually that week. It was always a highlight. So thank you for all the hard work that you guys did.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll see more in the future. All right. Well, with that introduction, Liam, I guess it's about time that we start talking about today's episode. And with Monica being our guest correspondent today, she is going to be giving her own scores for our categories today. Liam, why don't you, for any new listeners we have, just break down our four categories for them before we get into our plot synopsis here.
That's right, Cal. So we have four main categories that we break down every single episode or movie or what have you that we review. And those four categories are the plot, the visuals and or animation, the music, and finally, voice acting. Those are our four main categories. We also have the ability on occasion to throw out a little bonus point where if something isn't covered in those main categories or there's just a special moment or something in the episode that we want to shout out, we will also throw in a bonus point from time to time. But that will leave us to, at some point, we will all give our final scores, which will be blank out of 40.
Perfect. Awesome. So we've had several episodes rank perfect 40 out of 40s, just a few. You can check those out also in the archives at dcaureview.com. So this one, again, as we mentioned, Almost Got Him, is one that typically ranks pretty high on people's lists. So I'm interested to see where we all rank this episode today. Monica, we're going to throw it over to Liam for the IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, and then we'll start talking.
All right. So I will do this in my best announcer voice. And this is for Almost Got Him, which was written by Paul Dini, directed by Eric Radomski, with music by Stuart Balcom and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. In a bar, a collection of Batman's enemies chat about their failed attempts to kill him.
That's short and to the point.
Yeah, that's actually sometimes we complain when the synopses are that brief, but that actually does pretty much encapsulate our story, which is we arrive at some sort of dark, dank, musty jazz club where the Joker, the Penguin, Poison Ivy, Two-Face, and Killer Croc, as far as we know at that point in the episode, are there to they're all hiding out from Batman for various reasons. And while they're playing cards, they decide to each tell a story about a time they, as the episode title would suggest, almost got him.
I want a nice clean game, gentlemen.
That'll be a first.
So I hear you know who nailed the Mad Hatter last week.
No kidding. He sure gets around for one guy.
Yeah, well, that's where you're wrong. I don't think it is one guy.
Huh?
Well, I figure it. Gordon's got a bunch of them stashed someplace like a SWAT team. He wants you to think it's one guy, but...
Yeah, you're always seeing double.
It's obvious our Cape friend suffered some crime-related trauma when he was younger. Perhaps an over-anxious mugger blew off a piece of his face.
Sure. He could be all gross and disgusting under that mask. No offense, Harv.
Just deal.
Well, you know what I think? Not the robot theory again.
Well, he could be. You'd think one of us would have got him by now.
I've come the closest.
Are you kidding? I was the one who nearly...
Nobody's come closer to snuffing the Batman than me.
In your dreams.
Get out of my face.
The fact of the matter is we each have an almost gotten Batman story. I know mine's the best, but let's hear yours anyway. I'd say ladies first, but since we don't have any, we'll start with you, Pam.
That's right. So we start off with Poison Ivy, and she tells a tale of her almost getting Batman with some exploding pumpkins. Monica, what did you think of exploding pumpkins as a way to foil the Batman?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought exploding pumpkins. So I was kind of surprised by that one.
We talked about it before. She also very specifically says that the pumpkins are filled with, her words exactly, poison ivy gas, which we were trying to figure out if she was trying to get the brand over, like she trademarked the gas, like poison ivy gas, trademark. Yeah, like it's a very specific type of concoction that she's
like, gonna... Does she now sell that to other super criminals who... Is that like her side hustle, is to sell this poison gas to other like C and D list villains?
Well, after momentarily getting the upper hand, Poison Ivy is suddenly foiled by the old Batmobile, Liam, in a scenario that wouldn't be out of place in the last Batman Arkham game. he's sort of foiled by the Batmobile. And then our next story, and to me, one of the most interesting ones, is the story that Two-Face shares, where we get the introduction and sort of the backstory for how Batman came to get a hold of that giant penny for the Batcave.
That's right. As Jack Nicholson asked in the 1989 Batman, we always want to know where he gets those wonderful toys.
That's right.
And in this case, I guess the display items that he has in the Batcave. and yeah, here they decided to give it a little origin. And this feels like something out of either the Adam West show or some of those like 50s and 60s comics where they're at like the US Mint or something, and for some reason there's just a giant penny there. So naturally, what else would Two-Face do but tie him to that giant penny and try to literally flip it using a giant ton of gold bricks to flip Batman into the air and hopefully kill him. I mean, what better way would there be to kill Batman?
Yeah, we talked about it, and Monica, feel free to chime in if you have any thoughts, but we talked about before we went on the air that this story seems like a very, like Eric Radomski is responsible for the direction of this episode, and this whole episode feels like a very 60s centric Batman story that could have taken place where you have supervillains all hanging out playing cards together, and they're talking about these crazy things that happened to them, or that where they almost got Batman, and they almost all involve these crazy over the top props and scenarios that maybe were a little bit outside of the realm of the normal Batman the animated series.
Yeah, I like that his choices there are either get crushed to death or to break every bone.
Either way, it seems like a viable option that Batman's not going to be a formidable foe at that point.
Here's the deal. The coin lands face down. You'll be squashed flat. It lands face up. It'll just break every bone in your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they came up with a pretty creative way for him to get out of it, too, because, of course, Two-Face takes his belt off. And it's like, how does Batman get out of something when he's all tied up, where he steals? They made a point of like showing, and we'll get more into this in visuals, I'm sure, but they make a point of showing you that Two-Face's coin has these like very jagged edges to it. And of course, right before Batman is tied up, he like grabs Two-Face by the lapels. And we find out that he actually grabbed that jagged coin and is able to use that to free himself. So it's all, as you both talked about, it's very silly in just like what it is when you look at it from a top down view. But yeah, I think it's another clever little vignette of a little Batman adventure we didn't get to see. It's this kind of like, you know, like old shows or like sitcoms do like clip shows.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this is, but this is like clip shows from episodes we never saw. That's kind of how it feels to me.
I like it. Monica, do you have any thoughts? So we also had a question about this. So Two-Face introduces, and this also made it feel very 60s. He stole $2 million and also involved the Two-Ton Gang. So there's four members of the Two-Ton Gang. Do you think that means they each weigh 1,000 pounds?
Oh, yeah. yeah.
So my scenario, Monica, was that they are a British gang. And so they always have a lot of pounds because they steal money. They steal like British money. Uh-huh. But then they came to America and they're like, oh, they always have pounds with them. And then so it's like a double play where it's a reference to them stealing a lot of pounds, meaning money, but also they have so many pounds that they're worth they weigh 2 tons. So like, I'm really doing some like mental gymnastics on it, but that's what I settled on.
We didn't have it. We just didn't know if you had a theory on why, unless they weigh 1,000 pounds.
I never thought about it.
This is how our minds work, unfortunately. We're like, there's four guys. How could they be the Two-Ton Gang unless they each weigh 1,000 pounds?
That is interesting. Yeah, I have no idea.
So much in the way that we had to try and, before we had the actual origins of one Mr. Wing, we had to try and come up with a story in our heads, our headcanon of how these characters, so we had to come up with our own headcanon for the Two-Ton Gang.
We'll have to wait and see if Paul Dini and Alan Burnett write the two-ton gang into the next issue, the eighth issue of...
Yeah, if you have any pull at all with that, see if you can get them to give us the backstory for the two-ton gang. Yeah, all right.
I'll see what I can find out.
Okay, I appreciate it. So, of course, Batman foils Two-Face, and then we get a little sort of flashback to the table here at Liam, where the Joker... Every time these stories are told, the Joker sort of commiserates in a way. And I thought it was very funny that he commiserates with Harvey at this point, but also happens to lean over and look at Harvey's cards very subtly.
Yeah. Know? So like there's a couple little, and again, we'll probably talk more about that in visuals, but yeah, there's a few different notes that note at the end of the episode there, near the end, when the Joker wins the whole pot and takes everybody's money. That he may or may not have been using some less than savory tactics throughout this episode as well. Yeah, they did some cute little visual nods to that I'm sure we'll get to.
So next we have Penguin's story, where he invites Batman to his aviary of doom.
Welcome, my ebon-winged adversary. You have taken the bait as I knew you would. Now prepare to meet your end within my aviary of doom.
Aviary of what?
Yeesh, Pengers. How corny can you get?
Fah! Just because you mundane miscreants have no drama in your souls. Anyway, there he was in my big birdhouse.
Which he is quickly made fun of for, which I thought was a great bit also. It changes it to his big birdhouse. And Batman really viciously attacks one bird with another bird.
Yeah, this is a very violent, it's one of those things where I'm surprised, like a Saturday morning or I guess weekday afternoon cartoon, they were allowed to get away with this at that point, because not only does Batman's fighting animals, but then he grabs the poison tipped beak of a hummingbird and jabs it into the leg of a cassowary, and
which is, congratulations on having the name of that bird, because I did not have that written down.
Yeah, they're the giant death birds from, I believe they're mostly located in Australia, but
very good.
I was surprised they just got away from that, from like a standards and practices motif.
For sure. But of course, Batman foils the Penguin. He escapes. And then we get to the Joker's story, which coincidentally just happened the night prior to this meetup here to play poker. And he shows that he took over some sort of late night show and put Batman in the Laugh-O-Meter chair, which is an electric chair that is, of course, functions on the amount of laughter that is like shoved into the speaker or something.
Yes. And just to make sure that there will be ample voltage, he then pumps the studio audience, which he has held hostage with laughing gas. So they just to ensure that Batman will in fact be properly fried by this.
So the Joker is actually foiled this time, not just because of Batman's cunning nature, but instead we get the introduction sort of seemingly out of nowhere of one Selina Kyle, aka Catwoman, who shows up and foils the Joker's plot, helps Batman escape. However, she herself is captured. And that leads us to our final scene, where at that point, Batman reveals himself to be disguised as Killer Croc in one of the most awesome reveals ever. Monica, I just think it's such a great plot device to have him be a part of this crew the whole time.
Even as I speak, Catwoman is being trussed up at the Pussykins Pet Food Factory. First thing tomorrow, I'm sending a lovely case of cat food to Batman.
I don't think so.
Was it something I said? Well, well, an imposter in our midst.
Risking everything for your kitty, Batman?
You're not getting out of this one.
Maybe.
I'm not bad with traps myself.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was not expecting it when I saw it the first time. So, you know, you want to go back and watch it again from his point of view.
And, yeah, I think that's
and I like how he dumbs him down quite a bit when he does the top part.
I was going to say, yeah, that's the best, to me, the best part is watching this, knowing that twist, because then you get to see Batman, like, hamming it up as an actor. Yeah. Like, he's going, like, he's playing a too good of a croc, like, he's making him too dumb.
So good, so good.
It was a big rock.
That's incredible.
That, yeah, yeah. Him hamming it up as Killer Croc is certainly one of the highlights. And from what my memory of seeing this episode the first time, like, it was just,
oh, yeah,
as a child, it was one of my favorite lines. The big rock line was great. Yeah. So then we find out that after Batman reveals himself, that it's been a huge trap the whole time. The rest of the bar is filled with a lot of guns, many, many guns that I'm surprised that Standards and Practices allow them to show on a weekday afternoon kids cartoon. But it is then revealed, of course, that there's still one last tale to tell, and that is that Batman must rescue Catwoman, and thankfully he does. And then, as the romantic scene on the end begins to build, she turns away for a second, and then, wouldn't you know it, Batman gets away, and she utters the phrase that the title of the old episode is surrounded around, "Almost Got Him," and there we have it. So that is Almost Got Him, Liam. And I got to say, it's a lot of fun. This episode, I think if you were to look at the plot compared to a lot of the other great episodes that we look at, we'll compare it to A Heart of Ice, where that episode is so serious and so heart-wrenching for what that character is. And you can certainly go back in the archives and hear our review of that episode and how much we love that episode. That episode is Emmy Award winning. It's well known how great that episode is. This takes the polar opposite as far as tone is concerned, and but still does a great job and reminds you kind of why you love these cartoons.
Yeah, I think just from a storytelling perspective, it's a way to kind of, it's never boring, because we get these, like, instead of doing your traditional three act structure where you do your beginning, middle, and end, you get to do these little vignettes where Batman shows up, there's kind of a brief scuffle, and then he saves the day and you move on to the next story. So you get to do like these, you get, like I said, you get to do like five mini episodes inside this one 22-minute show. It's, I think that as just like as a storytelling device was a great idea and a way to kind of keep a format fresh, especially as there are quite a few episodes into the run at this point.
For sure. Monica, one of the things that we like to talk about here on this is, and it's hard not to, because obviously Batman's a comic book character first and foremost, but a lot of times we talk about how episodes would work as comic books or translated into comic books. Do you see this as an episode that easily translate into a 2D book format?
Yeah, I do. I like all the mini stories within, you know, I mean, you start somewhere and you're expecting to go in a certain direction and you come back around, you cover all these stories and then you end up somewhere completely different. You expect, once you find out that Batman's there, you expect him to be there to capture someone, not to find out something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I like that he doesn't want to have anything to do with them. He just wants the information. And so then he takes off after that. I mean, he throws the Joker first, but he takes off after that.
For sure. Yeah.
And I think that would work in a comic book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that some of the best comic books, I feel like, are made up of some of these little stories that stand on their own that sort of feed into a big story, even self-contained into a single issue. So that was that. Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. This would fit well into that format if need be. All right, Liam. So I guess it's time for us to give our plot scores here. Because this episode is so enjoyable, it is absolutely legendary. I would say, as far as, you know, we've talked about before, maybe being skeptical about some of those lists that came out on the 25th anniversary. And Monica, you may or may not know, we actually started this podcast because of all the nerd sites that came out at the 25th anniversary of Batman the Animated Series were ranking all the episodes from top to bottom, best to worst. And we looked at some of these lists and we were like, no, they got it wrong. That can't be right. That's not right. So we decided to do our own. And so a lot of times we come into these classic Batman episodes, maybe with a bit of skepticism. We're also, at least I will admit to being a naturally like a contrarian at times and sort of like, I
can advocate for that. It's his brother. Yes.
I'm a contrarian at time for contrarian's sake. So coming into this episode, I was willing to, and it works. I think when you're reviewing something, sometimes you have to be a contrarian just so that you
sure.
drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak. But with that said, I love this episode. I think it's perfect from start to end. It's so much fun. And it's an episode that stands out on its own and being just tonally very different than a lot of the other super serious good episodes. If you had any doubt, I gave it a 10 out of 10.
Nice. And I also, in fact, gave Plot a 10 out of 10 for all the reasons that we have just discussed. It's such a fun, it's quick moving. Like there's not really a second that feels wasted, but at the same time, it doesn't feel like anything moves too fast. Like all of the little stories with each of the villain feel like they go about exactly as long as they should. I had a lot of fun with this one. What about you, Monica?
I gave it a 9 out of 10.
Nice. Love it.
Right. I was torn, but I there are some episodes that are definite 10, so that's why I
respect that. Go with your instinct.
It's very close.
we always say on this episode, go with your gut. Like, go with your gut. If you give it a 9 first and then you're like trying to wish yourself into a 10, you're not staying true to your rating. So,
that's true. Yeah.
Love it. All right. Well, let's move on to our next category, which we're very excited to talk about with Monica, seeing as how she is a digital artist and works with the visual aspect of things literally for her job. So we're going to start discussing animation and visuals here for this episode, which is just a smorgasbord of just amazing different things. Of course, you have multiple different villains. You have different settings. You have, you know, various different, as we said, plot devices and things and oversized gimmicks and all that. So I'll throw it to Monica first and see, Monica, what stood out for you that you want to talk about as far as visually capturing your eye?
Visually, I would say I really enjoy the deliberate shift in the color schemes from each story. You know, we start out with a silhouetted background. And so you don't see who's in the background. You just see your focus is on the main characters that are playing the card game at this green table. And you've got this gradient going from yellow to blue. And the overhead light. So it's just, they're the only ones lit. And I just really enjoy that, how that's just the scheme that they went with, that's very simple. And then when we switch through the different narratives, we get Poison Ivy with lots of the pumpkin, the oranges and the red, the classic red sky. and then we get the fire with the explosions.
For sure.
And that's the only story I believe that has any explosions.
Correct.
And or at least in color. Yep. And then, you know, from there we switch to Harvey, Two-Face, with they're at the Mint, at the Gotham Mint. Mm-hmm. And I like that their choice was to go with greens.
Yep, everything's green.
Everything is green. So that was really cool. I like that. And then what do we have next? We have the Penguin, and there we have a blue sky. We have a night sky and just all blues and cool tones.
Yep.
So I really liked how each story worked with the color schemes. And then with the Joker, I love that he pulls out the TV set and we get to watch his we don't just hear his story. We see it visually. We see the rest of the gang gets to see it.
Yep.
And, so there we have all the black and whites, which works perfectly.
Yep.
And then from there on, we go back to the Pussykins cat food factory.
Oh yeah.
And there we've got just every color thrown in there. It's just, we've got all these colors, but somehow they work harmoniously together.
For sure.
We've got lots of warm colors. We've got cool colors. He brings in whoever it was, he or she. I'm not sure who did the paintings, but we get a lot of the greens from the mint, and then we get some of the warmer tones from, I would say some of the reddish brownish tones we get on the, I think on the ground, and mm-hmm. some of the machinery. And so, yeah, I really enjoy that. And I love how just in the animated series, we've got lots of different flat coloring and overly rendered all mixed together, and it just works beautifully.
It really is. Yeah. It's funny. We'll go back to the first one that you mentioned as far as like the opening scene in that club. It's funny that you mentioned like the silhouettes and the gradients. We actually watched on the original DVD copies of these animated series, there's actually a commentary that Bruce Timm and Eric Adamski and Paul Dini,
it's just
three of them are doing. They actually commented on that about how they actually took from the original, they took that idea from the original Max Fleischer Superman cartoons, where they saw a scene that was just sort of backlit and had some silhouettes in it, and realized that they could do something so minimalist while still creating something so atmospheric. And I thought that was so perfect. I thought it was like, Monica mentioned that. I was like, yes, like she spot on with exactly what they were going for too. And it created that like smoky atmosphere that you would think that like a club would be where these villains are playing poker, you know, set in whatever decade it's set in. But yeah, all of those, like, this is why we had you on, Monica. We wanted to hear you break down the visuals this way, in a way that's like, yes, the tones and the reds and the oranges. Oh, I have a question. I have a question if you noticed this, because we didn't debate this, but on the commentary, they mentioned that Poison Ivy's outfit was green. I mean, it was gray or black.
They say black. Specifically the Halloween outfit.
Yeah, the Halloween outfit. They say she's wearing a black outfit, but I thought it was highlighted in green. I don't know if you noticed it or not.
I thought it was green too.
Okay. Okay. We're going to go with the colorist
story. I know she didn't have anything on her legs. She didn't have shoes or, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's a highlight, and they say it in the commentary. They're like, yeah, we decided we wanted to give her this black suit. And I was like, it's not black. It's definitely green, but I wanted to make sure I wasn't colorblind. So.
Yeah, I don't remember it. I would have remembered if it was black.
Okay, cool. Awesome. So confirmed, Liam.
He's like yelling at me about this off the air. And I'm like, dude, I don't have an opinion on this.
Like, it's great. It's great.
He's like, oh,
it's great. It's great. It's not great.
I'm glad you were here to break our tie on this.
Well, fantastic. Well, I thank you so, like, man, like, hearing an artist talk about that stuff is awesome.
Yes.
We had probably some similar notes, but definitely not as eloquently said. Liam, what were your highlights as far as visuals were concerned for this episode?
So for me, probably the standout visual moment, and they mentioned on the commentary track that it was storyboarded by Glenn Murakami, who of course went on to produce the Teen Titans animated series and a bunch of other stuff.
He's a legend.
Yes, absolutely. Is the shot where we talked about it in our plot, where when Batman finally reveals himself and his voice changes to Batman's voice, and he grabs the Joker and throws him across and breaks the other table. We see a light is swinging in sort of the aftermath of it. And it swings onto the Joker and then puts him back in shadow. And as the shadows take over Batman in this croc outfit, we get the shadowed silhouette of the Batman suit, which, I mean, in a like a quote unquote realistic way, doesn't make a lot of sense, but like as a visual nod of him, like the light just swinging onto him in the croc suit, swinging off, we see Batman and then swinging back on to reveal its croc. That's like, that's such a cool way to do that reveal beyond the voice is with that little light trick that they did.
Agreed. Yeah, that was one of the highlights. It's interesting. I think they said this is one of Glenn Murakami's very first projects with Batman the Animated Series, if not his very first project.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to storyboard something so like it's just fits so well with the show. That silhouette of Batman with just the eyes showing is mm-hmm. the most legendary image that you would think of Batman. So for him to be able to fit that in a way that works so well, also at like revealing and winking to, remember, this is a television show for, you know, kids.
Right.
So if the kids haven't realized why is Killer Croc talking with Batman's voice, you now get the visual, like, oh, that's Batman. Like,
yeah.
Reveal. I thought that was really great. Any yeah. thoughts on that reveal, Monica?
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the entire episode, is the reveal of the lamp swinging back and forth, and just you see him and then it swings back and you see Croc. So that was really cool.
I agree. Yeah, that's great. One of the other visually interesting things, Lam, that and there's so many, because you have each of these little vignettes, which I think mm-hmm. also is what makes this episode so great, is you go to the Two-Face scenario, and we said, you know, he's tied to this giant penny, which may or may not have been out of scale based on how it's used later on in various episodes, but we won't talk about scaling so much at this part. But as he drops the gold onto the actual, you know, the scale and flips the penny up in the air, there's a sequence where the penny itself rotates 360 degrees. And need we remind any listeners, this is all hand-drawn animation. So this is pre-digital animation here. Mm-hmm. So a three-dimensional, you know, taking an object and making it go 360 degrees in this way. Like, it's to me, it's the best. It's probably the second best sequence of the episode.
Yeah, from like just a pure animation standpoint, the fact that they were able to pull that, that they had the like technical skill to pull off that image and have it look great. Yeah, because it's moving. You have to set up with the background kind of that it's moving very quickly, and then at the same time also do this kind of slow dramatic turn of the coin. And then also, you know, Batman has to be working with the coin to free himself at the same time. There's a lot of literal and figurative moving parts to that, and they pulled it off really well.
For sure. Now, I would be remiss not to, because we are critiquing this episode, I would be remiss not to mention there were a couple flubs in this scene. I'm going to ask Monica, I'm going to put you on the spot, Monica, and see if you noticed it. Did you notice the flub in this scene?
The belt.
Yep.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Yes, Batman clearly, Two-Face takes off his utility belt as he awakens, being held by the Two-Ton Gang, only for moments later to again reappear on him, and then later again to be off, and then later again to be on. It switched on and off like three or four different times. Yeah. So, Liam, I think you compared that almost to the inverse bat symbol.
Yeah, that would be common in a lot of the old, like, Hanna-Barbera or Filmation Batman or Super Friends cartoons, where all of a sudden, just in a scene, Batman's bat would be yellow and the oval surrounding it would be black instead. Or you know, we would just see inverted colors. Or sometimes, like, one character would be talking and another character's voice would be coming out of his mouth. Like, just, like, little goofs like that that we were kind of used to with a lot of those older era of cartoons, but I think it stands out because it didn't happen very often in this animated series.
Right. Maki, you can't relate to having any flubs like that ever, right?
Yeah, that would never happen to me.
Especially yellow bats. That's never. If it's been done, it's only been done intentionally.
You know, I just pretend not to see it. It didn't happen.
That's right.
You know what? When he's flying through the air, he doesn't have it, and that's good enough for me.
That's right. You know, he needed the coin at that point.
Yeah, because if he had it while he was flying, that would really bother me. But since he didn't, that's fine. I'll let it go.
There you go. Love it. Visually, though, this is just another fun episode. I think the characters, for the most part, seem to be very on model. Now, this is... Yes. This is the sort of Batman model that they use that has we've talked about it before, the couple variation of Batman models. This is the one with the sort of longer head with the droopy cow nose and the swoop back ears. I think in that Poison Ivy vignette, they said it was a independent contractor, somebody that was the storyboarder for that episode, that mm-hmm. may have only done this. To me, the ears in that were like Kelly Jones length long. Like, they were just like way up there as far as being maybe even off model for this version of that Batman. But with that said, I mean, it's hard to beat the visuals in this.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff to nitpick, certainly, and we already have, but and we'll do it again. Don't you worry. But yeah, no, I think there is, for the most part, just as we've talked about, same with plot, just getting to see all of these different characters on the screen at the same time. The visual gags right at the start of the episode, where it starts with just looking at everybody's hands, and you see the Joker pulling literally pulling an ace from his sleeve. We see, you know, the Penguin pouring himself coffee. We see Two-Face pouring half and half in his. Like, there's a lot of like cute little visual gags like that within where they do like either close-ups on their faces, on their eyes, or on their hands in some cases, that I thought were very, very clever as well.
And then I think ultimately, and Monica, you mentioned it, but that having that last, the Joker scene be in black and white, and Bruce Timm actually talks about in the commentary that they wish that they had the opportunity to do an entire episode in black and white. But It's funny how they used it as kind of a plot device to show, because that's when the show was kind of set in. They were made sure that it was sort of that retro, present day retro look. So all the cars are from the 1930s, and all the technology is too. But to me, I think it sets that scene very well. You mentioned that as you really enjoyed the way that it was completely set in black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. It really, I think it worked really well.
Yeah. It's great. I think that that whole sequence is funny. Also, the idea of Joker hosting a late night show. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've actually seen that played out in the recent, on a late night show in the recent Joaquin Phoenix movie.
That's right. Yeah.
So certainly some elements maybe have been borrowed from that going forward, but such a great, great sequence, just a great episode overall. I guess we can get into our scores unless you have anything else to add for that.
Well, I would be remiss not to mention, because I'm a one note character on this show, that the last few shots of Batman and Catwoman standing on the building, mm-hmm. you have the bright blue sky and the big moon behind them as they're talking, and Batman standing there, cape flowing beautifully, beautifully animated cape. That's some great hashtag cape movement. I haven't gotten to talk about that in a while, so I just had to drop that in.
And even Bruce Timm mentioned how beautifully, on the commentary, he mentioned how beautifully it was animated.
So yeah, that's some really good stuff.
You guys have an eye for Kate.
That's right.
All right, so I guess it's time to give our final scores here for our visual and animation. A lot of great stuff here. The only thing that stuck out to me, it had to be that it's the belt gaff. I couldn't get past the belt gaff. So because of that, I ended up giving visual and animation a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I went 8 out of 10. I think there's a lot of great stuff in it, but that bothered me a little bit. And then again, it's just a stylistic choice, I guess, for depending on who is the storyboard artist or perhaps the animation company working on any particular episode. But I'm not a huge fan of that. I like when the Batman is like super on model with the very square jaw, and this sort of version with the very elongated chin and the long swooped back ears is just not my favorite look of Batman. And especially there's like a side profile shot at the end of the episode where the nose is like really drooping down on it. And I was like, man, you just need to get that resized. Like that's too big for your head. So yeah, I'm certainly nitpicking here, but yeah, still a very strong episode with my 8 out of 10. Monica, what about you?
Yeah, I gave it a 9 out of 10. And yeah, Alrighty. The nose did bother me also at the end.
You know? Good. I'm glad I'm not alone in that.
It's like, okay, should I go back and watch some more episodes to see if it always looked like this?
Yeah, there's a.
I don't remember that.
It's weird. And you're in good company also, because on that commentary, Bruce Timm also alludes to not being a fan of the droopy nose either. So yeah, it always throws me off a little bit too. Because there are some episodes where that style is the model for that episode. And to me, as long as it kind of stays on model for the entire episode, I'm like able to say, okay, at least it's on model for this episode.
That's fair enough.
I also do prefer the more like square jaw, certainly tighter fitting bat mask. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. This week's music, of course, the late, great Shirley Walker was the composer. She worked also with Stuart Balcom, I believe, on some of the pieces here. What are your thoughts on music?
Yeah, I think there's some good stuff. We get like a nice little jazzy intro to the episode as the Super title card jazzy. As the title card pops up, and we get that sort of music comes back in kind of every time we cut back to them in them playing cards in the club. I think that's pretty cool. And then yeah, each vignette is kind of accompanied by its own little unique score. I think probably the most unique would probably be in the Joker sequence, because we have sort of the Joker theme that they go back through throughout the series, but it's played in like this over the top big band late night intro music style, which I thought was a very clever idea.
It's so meta that the Joker would then make like you think that there's like a live orchestra there who's like, play my theme song.
Yeah, it's a real like fourth wall breaking thing, but I did love that quite a bit.
Yeah, that was good. I thought there's a couple moments. We get notes of each of the villains' theme songs. We get a little bit of the Poison Ivy song, at least in her story. We don't get any of the Two-Face or the Penguin themes, however, yes, in their stories, interestingly. But yeah, the jazz feel at the beginning of the episode when the title card plays, and we get kind of this introduction, kind of makes you feel like you're already there in the club with these guys. I did appreciate that. So, Monica, I'm going to ask you as a visual person, I also tend to be a visual person, critiquing something like, of course, you're a human being, you can critique music, but like, is it harder for you to critique something when you have to like listen to it to like try and, because you clearly were like able to break down the visuals in ways that we wouldn't be able to, but like audibly, how do you deal with that?
My mind goes to that. I mean, it's just what I notice. I know everybody picks, you know, what they have a, you know, knack for.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think for me, it's, I always see the visuals right away. I see what color schemes that they use. But for the music, I really, really love the cabaret jazzy music in the beginning. Mm-hmm. It works perfectly. They couldn't have picked anything better.
Absolutely. So
that works really great. And how they, every time they go back, they're playing it in the background. So that works really great. And then we have a lot of dramatic music throughout with Penguin and then when we go to the Jokers, yeah, that's the upbeat. I think that works perfectly for the Joker and Harley. So yeah, it's I loved it. I love the music in it. I think it really enhances a lot of the visuals.
Absolutely. We talk about that a lot especially when we're reviewing Batman the Animated Series, and it's just that it in and of itself, the music for this show, and it still plays a part in even Superman and Justice League and the other shows that follow this, but especially with Batman the Animated Series, music is almost its own character in a lot of episodes. And it adds so much atmosphere and it adds so much to each scene, where if it's missing, you would, it like, that's why we talk about it every week when we review these episodes, because it adds so much to the show itself.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just the intro music, it just gives you chills.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Liam, so I think musically here for me, the standout, again, I'm going to go back to the coin flipping scene, and that the Batman theme plays, that opening Batman theme, that classic Shirley Walker Batman theme plays as he's sort of struggling to break free from the ties on this, and the tensions are rising, and is he going to escape before the coin lands and breaks every bone in his body or smashes him? And of course he does, and it sort of triumphantly comes in there. And there's a couple different spots in each of the vignettes where Batman is victorious, that the Shirley Walker theme sort of plays triumphantly. Those were the highlights, I thought, for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think we've talked about that quite a few episodes, but the way they kind of weave these recurring musical notes and crescendos that we hear in a lot of the episodes, how they weave them into the overall soundtrack of any given episode and sort of bring it in. You don't always expect it when it pops up, but it's obviously very familiar when you hear it. So yeah, they did a great job with that. And for all those reasons, I actually gave music in this one a 9 out of 10.
Nice. I also gave music a 9 out of 10. It's very, very strong. And yeah, I think this is one, again, if you have the ability to, this soundtrack is available for download, so you can listen to these songs sort of isolated. That adds some of that, maybe some enjoyment to that. Monica, what did you give for music?
I gave it a 10.
Yes.
Because it is so, they're so memorable, and they really stand out and really enhance the visuals.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, a good solid 10.
Monica's love first it. 10 of the show. I love it.
Love it.
All righty. All right. And last but not least, Liam, let us discuss our voice actors. We have a huge cast today, obviously, with the all the rogues being here. And of course, a couple of the additional characters featured here on this week's episode. Who are our players this week?
Yeah, we have a lot of familiar faces this week.
It's a who's who, honestly.
Actually, yes, exactly. We have Richard Mull as Two-Face, who I think does a tremendous job. I'm just going to kind of go through the names and then we can kind of talk about them individually as they come up. But we have Paul Williams as Penguin. We have Adrian Barbeau as Catwoman. We have Aaron Kincaid as, well, it says in the IMDb, it says he plays Croc, but actually he played Batman in this episode. Aaron Kincaid as Croc / Batman. And then, of course, we have Arlene Sorkin as Harley. We have Diane Pershing as Poison Ivy. And we have, of course, our two main stars we can't stop talking about, that being Kevin Conroy as Batman and, of course, Mark Hamill as the Joker. And I will just note my favorite, probably my favorite little in gag that I waited till now to mention is Mark Hamill mocking the idea of Mark Hamill's Joker mocking the idea of exploding pumpkins, which is a really fun little meta joke, because at the time he was also the voice of the Hobgoblin on the Spider-Man cartoon.
And that's how I almost got him.
With exploding pumpkins.
I'd like to hear you do better.
That was also on Fox Kids in the 90s. So I love that. I love a little bit of meta, DC Marvel jabbing. I love that.
Always fun. Always fun. Yeah. That was a nice little turn there. Yeah, I mean, this is a who's who of these legendary voice actors. And Monica, when we talk about it a lot on the program also, is, you know, when we're reading comic books, so when we're reading, Batman the Adventures Continue, and these characters show up, these are the voices that we hear when these characters speak as we're reading through it. These guys are just absolute legends. And I feel like their performances in this episode are really good.
Yeah, they were spot on. It's high praise for all of them. They're perfect.
Absolutely. I would say, really, Mark Hamill as the Joker is probably ultimately the star, because he gets all he gets all the quips, he gets all the humor and the comedy in between, and ultimately he is almost the one that foils Batman sort of the most, and sort of, I think his story gets the most screen time out of all of them,
for sure.
But we also, of course, get Arlene Sorkin as Harley Quinn, and she's featured in this in a very small but funny role, where she's sort of playing the Ed McMahon to the Joker, and doing a great job at it. So I really, really, really great. And ironically, I feel like Kevin Conroy has the least amount of work in this episode.
I'd say, like I said, Aaron Kincaid plays Batman for most of the episode, so he only has a few lines, but. Yeah, he's of course he's great, and I think it is really fun, and that we mentioned this that Harley is like the final boss of this. I think Monica mentioned it when we were talking about plot, but how the whole time you assume, once you realize it's Batman, you think, oh, maybe he's there to capture all the bad guys, but in that case, he's really just there to squeeze some information to go save Catwoman out of it, and then he still has to have this sort of brief confrontation with Harley before he can call it a night. Like, I think that's kind of clever. And yeah, I always, again, like you said, Cal, it's, these are the voices you sort of always associate with those characters, especially if you're reading a comic or something like that. But
and we don't get a lot of episodes. I think this is the only episode that, other than maybe the Strange Secret of Bruce Wayne, where we get a few of the villains together. This is the one and Trial,
yes,
where we get a larger Rogues Gallery presence. Mm-hmm. But this is almost like you're sitting on the floor playing with your action figures, and you have right. all of your villains around, and you get to play with all of them at the same time, because there's not a lot of episodes that feature all of the main Batman rogues like this.
Yeah, and they mentioned that they were actually able to get I think almost all of them, with the exception of Adrienne Barbeau, who plays Catwoman, together to record at the same time along with Kevin Conroy, which again, that's something we talk about a lot. But you can all the ability of these actors to play off of each other in person, even though this is in this case, they're only lending their voices, not their faces or their likeness, their ability to still be able to play off each other and to get all of these talented people in one room together to record was certainly something special. And to my understanding, is not something that happens in animation recording very often. So.
Yeah, it's special. It's another thing that makes this whole series special. And obviously that's why we're talking about it, but there's actually also a very famous picture of the crew that they got on this day recording sort of all the voices together, mm-hmm. with I think Bruce Timm and maybe Paul Dini also there at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that's it's really, really awesome. They were able to get everybody in the room, and they were able to play off of each other. And they talk about in that commentary that we listened to, they talk about how Mark Hamill is just so dynamic in the way that he stands up at when he performs and waves his arms around a lot, and while other people are kind of sitting down and being a little bit more reserved in their performances. But like to be a fly on the wall in that recording studio watching these greats record these lines, like, man, how awesome would that be?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So for all the reasons that we've talked about here, I actually gave voice acting another 10 out of 10.
Absolutely. I find find it hard to disagree with you, my friend. I am also going to give this a perfect 10 out of 10. Monica, that leaves it to you. What is your score for voice acting?
10, of course. A perfect
10 out of 10. Awesome. Well, that will, I think, lead us to... Oh, that is the sound we've not heard in quite a long time. That is our bonus point sound, meaning somebody here, at least one of us, has a bonus point. I don't believe it's me. Monica, do you have a bonus point for something? No, not Monica. So that must mean it's Liam.
That must mean it's me. But yeah, my bonus point is, and then we kind of briefly touched on this, I think you did, Cal, in plot, but the timeless nature of this story, I think, is such that you could see this being a comic in the 1950s with, you know, Dick Sprang doing the art, or you could see like a grimmer and maybe a little more grittier version with like a Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams tale from the 70s, or, you know, a Jim Lee drawn, Jeff Loeb written story from the 2000s, or in this case, you know, it just so happens to have fallen into the brilliant mind of Paul Dini, who wrote this episode, and him being able to bring that story to life, of course, with Eric Radomski, the director, and all the amazing, background artists, all these people that worked together to bring the story to life. But to me, what really struck me was that, this is a perfect Batman story, because you could really tell it about any era of Batman and the story would still work. Like, maybe the death traps would be a little more over the top if this was an Adam West episode, but it's still like the essential core elements here are just such like classic, pure, unadulterated Batman that I think it's just one of those stories that really like captures the heart of not only who Batman is, but who all of his rogues gallery are.
I love that. I love that. So you're giving it a bonus point. I don't know how I'm going to like surmise that, like summarize that.
And timeless story.
Timeless story. Okay. Extra bonus point for timeless nature of the story. All right. Perfect. Well, I think that will bring us to tallying up our final scores here at the end. Tallying everything up for me, I end up with a 38 out of 40. Very, very strong.
And I am just behind you there with a 37 out of 40. And Monica, what about you?
A 38.
There you go.
Perfect. All right. So the other thing that we do at the end when we're done talking here, Monica, is we talk about rewatchability. So we talk about, is this an episode that you would watch over and over and over again? If you're recommending this to somebody, would you recommend this episode? So I will throw it over to you first. Is this worthy of rewatchability?
Of course it is. It's a must. It's, yeah. I would say to get a nice feel for hearing the villains' POV, that it's a must to see them in their natural element and see the dynamics between them and break away from just always seeing Batman's point of view.
Absolutely.
Definite must, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think this is an episode that, yeah, especially if you're introducing someone to the series, if this is literally their first time, like, this would be on the short list of episodes. If you're going to watch five episodes of Batman, I think this has to be on the list of one of them, maybe along with that Mr. Freeze episode or some of the other fun visual episode, you know, that maybe are more fun visually. But like this one, I think just because, yeah, you get a little sampling of all of these different villains and you get all these fun little stories that all work together to eventually tell this final story of Batman saving Catwoman at the end. So yeah, I think this is an easy must watch.
For sure. I agree with both of you. This is a must watch. If you're writing down a list of episodes that you're going to recommend to somebody that has never watched this before, this is not only is it fun, it incorporates a lot of the Batman rogues, as you said. Mm-hmm. You get a great idea of various different visuals and art styles and incorporating just the beauty of the animation. It also incorporates everything that this is known for, between great voice acting, tremendous music, mm-hmm. tremendous artwork, and then a plot that's not only easy to follow, but it's fun.
Yes.
and feels authentically Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would definitely go with this is definitely a thumbs up, two thumbs up, way up for rewatchability. All right. Well, that will begin to wrap us up here. First and foremost, we would like to thank the wonderful best friend of the program, Monica Gavina, for being on here. Thanks for joining us this week, Monica. It was such a pleasure to have you on and hear your perspective on this classic Batman the Animated Series episode.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor. Thank you.
Awesome. Do you have anything that you want to plug? Anything that we can, I know that the good folks at home can follow you on social media. Anything else that we should know about?
Yeah, the special that's coming out in January, I believe. Is it?
All right. I think they solicited it for December, but maybe it's January.
Oh, really?
I think it is solicited for January. Yeah. I think Monica's right on this one.
He would know. He would know, and you would probably know better. So January.
I'm starting on it next week. So.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we are certainly.
And I also have Flashbacks. I don't know when that's coming out. It's a kid's a book about weather and
cool.
science. So yeah.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm sure we'll do our best to help you promote that once that happens. So you can follow Monica on Twitter and on Instagram. You're at Monica Cubina, I believe, right?
Yes. I think I'm Monica.Cubina on Instagram.
Perfect. Monica.Cubina on Instagram, at Monica Cubina on Twitter. Follow her. She's not only a great artist, she's a great person and
Absolutely.
Has been so kind to us, as we said. So Monica, thank you so much for coming on this week. It's like I said, it's been an honor.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you guys.
All right, Liam, what an honor to have Monica Cubina. Make sure you check out her artwork. Make sure you check out Batman the Adventures Continue also, her amazing artwork in that. We mentioned that a couple times, but make sure you go out, purchase those when you get a chance, either digitally or go get the hard copies or go get the trade paperback when it is out, and definitely check out the holiday special when it comes. Liam, we are excited here. As we said, we are kicking off a month of Batman the Animated Series, which means we are covering yet another episode next week. Do you have a preview for what we'll be covering?
Yes, I do. In fact, we will be picking up at the very next episode in the production order, which is, in fact, we talked about him a little bit this week. He gets his own episode for the first time in a while, and that being the Penguin in Birds of a Feather, which I think is another episode that tends to rank very highly in a lot of people's best of lists that we mentioned earlier with Monica. But it remains to be seen whether or not we agree that it belongs at that spot. So looking forward to looking back at another very memorable episode next week. We got a pretty exciting month coming up.
Absolutely. So don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at DCAU Review. Be sure to check us out for previews of upcoming episodes, a bunch of conversations about the DCAU, all of that happening on our social media. Don't forget to also check out the website at DCAUReview.com. You can also subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Also, a lot of other podcasts we're available on. You can check those out. Don't forget, if you can, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It helps get our podcast out to more people. Also, if you want to support the program, you can check out our shop at DCAUReview.com. Just go and click on the shop tab. We don't do podcast ads on purpose because we don't like podcast ads. So if you want to support the podcast in any sort of way, go ahead and you can pick up a shirt or a hat or something like that. But Liam, this has been a fun episode. Man, how cool is Monica?
She's the best. We've said it before. We'll say it again. She's the greatest. It's so nice of her to take the time out to do this episode with us and to be game for letting us nerd out on her so much as well. So
and follow the format.
Followed the format perfectly. And hearing her perspective, especially on the artistic and visual side of this episode, was fascinating. I feel like I learned something, which is also pretty cool.
We're not just a podcast. We also learn things on
right,
this podcast.
Exactly. That's right. So
fun and educational.
Yeah, she did a great job. And it's, again, so kind of her to take the time out to be a part of our show and to be so kind to us as we have created a relationship with her over the last few months. So thank you so much to her, and thank you to everybody for listening.
Absolutely. Well, I look forward to checking out Birds of a Feather next week with you. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Adios.